Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
John Clayton here, and we're pleased to be joined by Peter King, who has MLQB, and of course has been around for so long. And basically what we're going to do is kind of go through all the memories and all the ways that we've covered football and the stories of covering football. Because, you know, Peter, when was the first time that you started covering the NFL? Mine was 1972, covering the Steelers when I was in high school. When was your first time covering the league?
Well, mine was... You know, I worked in Cincinnati starting in 1980, and occasionally I'd go over and do a Bengals sidebar or something for the Cincinnati Inquirer. But my first year on the beat was 1984, and that's one of the first times that we ever ran into each other. This is a story I think people will really get a kick out of. You are working out in Tacoma, right, in 1984.
I was still in Pittsburgh in 84. 86, I was in Tacoma. So I came
86, you're in Tacoma.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So you come in, and basically what happens, I remember this. This happened once with Bart Wright.
Right.
You know, your editor in Tacoma.
Yeah. But Bart was the one who brought me out here.
Yeah, Bart was the greatest. So Bart basically calls me one day, and he says, hey, I can't get that PR guy out there to respond to any of my phone calls. I'm trying to do a story on Collinsworth. And so I said, well, Al Heim, he's kind of a private relations director. He was the PR guy for the Bengals. So I said, look, I'll mention it to Collinsworth. I'm sure he'd do an interview. When do you want to do it? He goes, either Friday or Saturday. So I arranged it. Collinsworth does it. And I see Bart Wright out there, and he goes, that's the craziest thing. I walk into this building. I never even run into the PR guy. I go interview Collinsworth and get out. So it's crazy. But anyway, and then you would come in first in Pittsburgh and then in Tacoma, and it's almost like, you know, we had the run of the place because we didn't really have this kind of PR guy to help us cover this team.
I still remember one time. I don't know. Were you on the beat then when Sam Weiss chased me down the alley right outside the facility?
No.
Well, apparently, you know, because you know Sam was always great to deal with, but then sometimes he would go a little bit crazy.
He was a nut. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be it. And so Sam, being the coach of the team, you know, I'm down there, and this is for the Pittsburgh Press, and I'm so trying to grab a couple players. And so when I get there, I mean, he was gracious in the first day, but then the second day when I was trying to get players, he was really mad about that. Just, and these are just interviews. I'm not watching practice or anything else. And so he starts chasing me out toward the parking lot and down the street a little bit. It was just wild because, as you know, with Al Heim, I mean, he wasn't going to stop much. In fact, I remember when Al Heim would come to Pittsburgh, you know, he would, you know, there was at that time, you would always have a PR guy advance the game. So they would fly in on a Wednesday. Okay. And so he would come up, be right outside of Three River Stadium, and the cab was still rolling. And he would come in, say, you guys need anything? And so we'd just, hey, how about the phone number of this? Yeah, it was like, he'd give you like six phone numbers. He'd get back in the cab and fly back.
That was really, you know, it was really a different day and time because it used to be that, you know, if you covered a team, the visiting team PR guy would always come in, either spend the week or spend a bunch of time, and you'd end up maybe going to dinner or whatever one night during that week, and you really got to know people a lot more. But now it's like everything's done electronically, you know, and there isn't as much interest. I mean, everything is so immensely covered anyway. There isn't as much interest right now, you know, in getting publicity. You know, the Pittsburgh Steelers could care less if the Steelers are written about in the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't help them at all, you know, and that's, I mean, that's one of the ways time has changed. I always tell people this story, John, that, you know, when I go around and people say, man, how big has it gotten? I tell them that, I don't know what the exact number was in 2000, but at the scouting combine, there's somewhere between 15 and 25 or so members of the media at the scouting combine in Indianapolis. We're standing there in the lobby, and Plexico Burris walks through. And I had tell him, hey, I'm with Sports Illustrated, need to write about you. We ended up going in and having lunch and spending about an hour and a half together. And today, so instead of that, whatever, 15, 20, 25, there's 1,243 credentialed members of the media at the Combine this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're lucky. I mean, lucky if you get in a question of your own to these guys when they're at the Combine. So, yeah, the world has changed just a little bit.
And, you know, it was funny because the two of us paired up on something very early and compared to where things are now. And what that was, we did a notes network. And so the two of us kind of set that up.
Yep.
We took about 11 writers. In fact, ironically, on a Thursday morning, we would be, you know, getting together on a conference call. And then for an hour, you know, telling any stories, any good notes on the team and all that. And now everything is done with email. You can Google search so many different things. And there's so much more information that I find readily available that I just kind of pinch myself every day.
Yeah, it's kind of easy now, and there's a little bit of a danger in that, I think, John, in that when you don't really necessarily have to pick up the phone and talk to people, you can do the vast majority of your homework just by, reading these papers in all the cities in the NFL online. I think it's a little bit dangerous. I mean, look, you still do this. I do it. I mean, I find that the 3 weeks or so I spend away every summer is the most valuable part of my football season, going to NFL training camps. And people sort of yawn. They think, you're just watching practice. I said, honestly, that's not why I go. You know, I go because – you know, basically, for instance, I've never met and had a, I've met them, okay, but I've never sat down and had a conversation with Vance Joseph, for instance. So, I mean, I'm going to go to Denver. I'll spend a day or so there and talk to him and Elway and you know, Simeon or whoever and a few guys. And, you know, really, if you're on the phone, you can do it, but it's just not the same. And so, I mean, those are the kind of things that I hope that as a business, we're still going out and touching people rather than just reading about them and getting on conference calls and hearing canned quotes.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's why I love going to games every week, being out as much as possible, because you don't know what you're going to see. You don't know who you're going to run into, but you know you're going to pick up valuable information that's going to be so readily available to talk about what you need to talk about or write about. That's why, you know, I'm so happy that, you know, I will continue to go to games and be out and about, because you learn so much. Do you have an adjustable rate mortgage that is about to increase? Or first and second mortgage that you would like to combine into one? Low mortgage payment? Hey, give Keel Mortgage a call today. They are local, friendly, and have been serving families up and down the West Coast for over 3 decades. With interest rates forecasted to rise, the best time to explore your options is now. It starts with a phone call to 1-888-778-KIEL or online at keelmortgage.com. That's Keel Mortgage, 888-778-KIEL. They can help. CL53969.
I think the one other thing about the difference today, I think what's really interesting, when you watch the way the game is covered, John, you see how, for instance, I'll give you a quick example that. You know, everybody these days, like the first year I ever covered the Bengals full time was 1984. And in the off season that year, I was still, partially, I was a sidebar guy on the Cincinnati Reds. And then when the season was over, I was doing some Xavier basketball. And so, you know, now, and I was the only guy at the paper other than on Sunday who covered the team. And now it's almost, I think probably most newspapers in the country have two guys on it year round, even throughout the spring and summer, with the exception of maybe 4 weeks of vacation. So I kind of look at this now and I say, look, it's great that all this coverage is happening, but I think so much of it is basically, a lot of it in the off season really is space filler. Mm-hmm. A lot of the draft coverage is space filler. And, look, the NFL has the country right where it wants it, 24/7, I'd say not 365, but 365 minus a month, let's say, of NFL coverage. And you really wonder, and I ask myself this running my website, the MMQB, I ask myself this all the time, are we really doing the right thing in every single, in every single week, every single week of the year, posting two and three things every day, new things about the NFL. I sometimes really struggle with that, because I think sometimes we're inventing things, just to make it a 24/7 operation. So that bothers me some, and it's something that I have to deal with sometimes. Like this week on our site, and in the last few weeks, we do special things. We just took some great stories out of the archives. We had Frank DeFord on George Halas, and I said we're going to run two stories a day for the week, and that's going to be our week. And everybody needs to take a breath and not try to invent stuff that when there's really nothing happening. And I would say that's probably, that's one of my biggest worries about the business right now.
Yeah, but I guess the biggest thing is that there's a thirst for knowledge and a thirst for stories, and it's just a matter of making sure that whoever is looking for those can be able to identify them. And I guess that because MMQB is a destination site, that's good, because somebody's going to go on there pretty much every day and say, okay, what's new, what's new, what's new. It's the same thing at ESPN.com, that there's a thirst to find that. And if you have a brand and you have a brand, people are still going to be looking.
I agree, which is why, we always try to be different. Starting July 17, I guess next week, we're going to do something that I really had fun with. My executive editor at the MMQB, a guy I've worked with for, 15 years or so at SI and now at the MMQB, Mark Moravec, he's been sort of pushing me to do an all-time draft. So I got a bunch of guys. I got Bill Polian and Ron Wolf and Ernie Accorsi and John Wooten and Gil Brandt and a few others. And we had a draft. We had an all-time draft. We basically have 12 teams. Tim Layden wrote a long story about what each team was like and the coaches paired with all the players. It's great. I got Chuck Knoll coaching Tom Brady. So those are the kind of things you just try to, in the 4 or 5 weeks that it's sort of dead time, you try to come up with things that you think people will get a kick out of.
One of our labor of loves is being a selector for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. My first year was 1988, and I remember I was out here in Seattle. Of course, I was the Seattle representative at that time, but the Seahawk representative. And, Myron Cope was the Pittsburgh voter, and Myron's wife took ill, and so Myron couldn't be there. And so my first meeting in the Hall of Fame, and I think I was like 33 years old or something like that, 32, and I'm up there. I'm the youngest guy in the room, and it was going to be Mel Blunt, Terry Bradshaw, and Lynn Swann, and I had to do the presentation for that. You talk about being intimidated trying to go with those three guys. Two out of the three make it. Lynn Swann did not, but what an experience. When was your first Hall of Fame vote?
John, I think this year that we just had was my 25th year.
Yeah.
And so, let me see, I guess that would be 93. I think I was in my fourth or fifth year at SI. I was the youngest person on the committee. And I agree, I was totally intimidated when I first walked in there. And I think I was mostly intimidated because I have tremendous respect for sports history, not just football history, but for sports history. And I've always taken it like, I probably over-respect a little bit the era of Don Hutson and later Otto Graham and all those guys. And so that has been I totally agree with you. It's been a total labor of love. I really have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I still remember one of the things that helped me out so much is that Will McDonough, formerly of the Boston Globe, NBC.
Oh, yeah.
Will would sit, I'd sit next to Will, probably not Will sitting next to me. I made sure I tried to sit next to Will. And one of our favorite votes, and of course it was so anti-NFL, was that we had, you know, and Will taught me how this all worked. And he said, now here, I need you to do this, I need you to do this, I need you to do this. And basically what it is, you just, you know, go talk to people, you be polite and say, hey, where do you stand on this? Would you be willing to listen and all that? And so we got Al Davis, who was at that time, he was suing the league, John Riggins, who was not the most popular guy in NFL front office circles because of, you know, how different he was, and John Mackey, the former member of the who ran the union.
Yeah.
And so those three, and it was the most fun vote I've ever had because it's like you knew it didn't go well in New York, but sure went well for the Hall of Fame.
It's one of the things about this that I – over the years, I always shake my head at. I shake my head at when people say, "Oh, the New York guys get their New York people in, and all that." And the big city is a big city thing. That's why it's been so hard to get Denver guys in and all that. And I say, "Well, is Pittsburgh a big city? Is Green Bay a big city?" And I've also said over the years that there's actually more voters, more California voters than there are sort of the megalopolis voters, more voters with California ties than are, you know, Washington, Baltimore, Philly, New York, Boston voters. So I think sometimes I think probably the thing that frustrates me on the committee more than anything else is this feeling that we all have agendas and we're all just voting for our guys. And I say, hey, look, if we had agendas, I covered the New York Giants for 4 years in the 80s, and nobody was better to me in all the years I've covered football than George Young. I love George Young, but I haven't voted for him for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he's up every year, and I have other people on the committee who are passionate about George Young. And this is nothing at all against George Young. It's just that I covered that team. I saw what happened. And I believe, and I will always believe, that that was a Bill Parcells, George scouted the players. He got a lot of players. I get it. And there have been a lot of general managers over time who've done that. But when you're around the team every day, you know why they're winning. And just my feeling is it was more Parcells. But anyway, I only bring that up to say that people say, you're going to support all the New York guys. You're going to support the guys who you know. And that's kind of a frustrating thing to me because I just feel like, I'm doing what my conscience tells me to do. And, sometimes the outside world doesn't agree. That's just the way it is. These decisions are hard, and if you don't want to make them, you shouldn't be on the committee. But sometimes it's frustrating when people think that our motives are less than, and I can't speak for all 48, John, neither can you. But all I can say is I go in there and I vote my conscience. I don't vote. I don't vote any other way. And it has been fun. And overall, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't feel the way I feel.
See, and that's what people don't understand is that you identify a player and you say, okay, that's a Hall of Famer. Well, that's fine, but we're voting for 5 Hall of Famers a year, and we have to say no to 10. And it's not that we're saying no to them as Hall of Famers. It's just that year. You can only get 5 in. And I still remember because I was so active in this for about 3 years trying to campaign because what happened is Paul Zimmerman, who is one of the best voters ever, said, hey, we got a backlog here in the senior committee. We need an extra spot. So what they did is they took two spots for seniors and put that in at the expense of current guys, guys that were just coming up. And so that created a backlog that was so bad that Cortez Kennedy and Randall McDaniel couldn't even make the top 15. So fortunately, we made the switch, and now we have the alternating things. Eventually, that you had two seniors 1 year that are separate and one contributor, and we're able to get that. But it's allowed us to take that backlog, because there's always going to be a good backlog, because you're saying no to 10, and in most years, those 10 are Hall of Fame candidates that should be considered, but they just didn't make it.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think in the coming years, the way we're doing it now is good, and I know there's a lot of pressure to even expand it further, but I really think that we're either at our absolute peak and possibly we could do one more per year, but I just think eight is enough. And I understand it makes it really, really difficult, because some years there's going to be more than you feel, there are going to be more people who you believe should be in the Hall of Fame and should be entering that year. But I think the one issue that we have is, especially now, because I think the Terrell Davis vote now has really changed the game. I'm going to write something about this sometime this summer. But I think it's changed the game because basically now you had one guy who had three superior years and one very good year, and then he was hurt. And maybe the best playoff running back of all time. Seven playoff games, I think I'm right, seven playoff games, 700-yard games, great game in the Super Bowl, all that. And again, this is in no way demeaning. He's in the Hall of Fame. He deserves it. I always believe, whether I support a guy or whether I didn't, if he's in, he's deserved it. He's deserved. But what I'm saying is, now I think one of the things that we're going to have to deal with on this committee is, I think I wouldn't call it a flood, but the line has been drawn now. And so if you have had, let's say, four great years in the NFL, and there's a few of those guys, 4, 5, or 6 years. To me, when I saw Tony Boselli in the hotel last year at the Super Bowl, the day after this, and I just said, Tony, it was a really good day for you yesterday. And I had to explain to him, here's why. And the reason it was great for Tony Boselli, who had, I guess, either 6 or 7 really outstanding years, Tony Boselli did more at the tackle position as an NFL player than Terrell Davis did at the running back position, which is saying a lot, And so I think we're going to head into a period where a lot of guys whose careers didn't really stand the test of time are going to say, hey, what about us?
It is going to be interesting. Hey, Peter, we can go on forever, but I know you got things to write. So thank you so much for joining us.
John, my pleasure. I wish you all the best, and I'll see you out there at training camp this summer.
Okay, sounds good.